media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee will meet December 21st at 4:30 p.m.
Hey, this is KBOO, KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Time for Political Perspectives. Today presenting Sojourner Truth Radio. And an interview with Ramona Africa, the sole survivor of the 1985 bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Remember that? At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, we got the food show today featuring Liz Carlisle. She's the author of Lentil Underground, Renegade Farmers and the Future of Food in America. And please remember that KBOO keeps you informed with the truth. And you can get involved by making a tax-deductible contribution to community radio. Just go to kboo.fm and help out. It's the end of the year. Great time to make that contribution. And now we're going to go to Sojourner Truth Radio. Thanks for tuning into KBOO today.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth exclusively on Pacifica Radio and its affiliate networks. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, today. Author, award-winning actor, and filmmaker Bill Duke joins us to discuss Dark Girls, a companion book to his 2012 documentary exploring the impact of color, the phenomena known as colorism within communities of color and in the wider society. Why is light skin favored over dark skin? What price do black women who are dark-skinned as well as light-skinned women have to pay? What is the impact on children? What about who is defined by the wider society about having good hair versus bad hair? Who profits from a definition of beauty that applies to less than half of the world's population? We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari, a judge at...
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Joining us for a conversation is Ramona Africa. She joined us recently in studio. Currently, she is the sole survivor of the catastrophic residential bombing of the Move House by Philadelphia police on May 13th, 1985. The bombing resulted in the deaths of 11 people, including 5 children. Ramona Africa has continued to work tirelessly as a spokesperson for MOVE, advocating for Black liberation and human rights and the release of family members from prison. Also joining us is Karim, a revolutionary MOVE supporter. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
I'm Max Pringle with these headlines. Congressional Republicans' final drive to deliver a $1.5 trillion tax bill to an eager President Trump begins today with a vote in the House, quickly following a vote later in the day or on Wednesday in the Senate, is expected to seal the deal. Both tallies likely will go down along party lines. The Senate result was in doubt in recent weeks. Only on Friday did Republican leaders cement the needed support for the legislation, securing endorsements from wavering GOP Senators Marco Rubio of Florida and Bob Corker of Tennessee. More holdout GOP senators, moderate Susan Collins of Maine and Mike Lee of Utah, came into the fold on Monday. Now, the biggest reshaping of the U.S. tax code in 3 decades is on a clear path to passage and a presidential signing into law. The complex legislation rushed through both houses blends elements of separate House and Senate bills that were recently passed. It permanently slashes the tax rate for corporations from 35% to 21% and reduces levies on the wealthiest Americans while making more modest and temporary tax reductions for others. It doubles the standard deduction used by 2/3 of U.S. households to $24,000 for married couples, which ends in 8 years. Federal investigators say an Amtrak train making the first ever run along a faster new route hurtled off an overpass south of Seattle on Monday, killing at least 3 people. Attention focused on the train's speed. Investigators say the train was traveling at 80 miles per hour in a 30 mile per hour zone. Bella Dinzar, an NTSB board member, told reporters that information from the event data recorder in the rear locomotive provided information about the train's speed.
Preliminary indications are that the train was traveling at 80 miles per hour in a 30 mile per hour track. The question is, why was the train traveling at 80 miles an hour in a 30 mile an hour zone? And the answer is, it's too early to tell.
There were 80 passengers and 5 on-duty crew members on board when the train derailed and pulled 13 cars off the tracks and onto a nearby highway. The Trump administration is publicly blaming North Korea for a ransomware attack that infected hundreds of thousands of computers worldwide in May and crippled parts of Britain's National Health Service. Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert wrote in a Wall Street Journal op-ed published Monday night that North Korea was directly responsible for the WannaCry ransomware attack and that Pyongyang will be held accountable for it. Bossert told reporters that the administration is running out of patience with North Korea's leadership.
At this point, North Korea has done everything wrong as an actor on the global stage that a country can do. And President Trump has used just about every lever you can use, short of starving the people of North Korea to death, to change their behavior. And so we don't have a lot of room left here to apply pressure to change their behavior.
Bossert said the administration's finding of responsibility is based on evidence and confirmed by other governments and private companies, including the United Kingdom and Microsoft. The WannaCry attack struck more than 150 nations in May, locking up digital documents, databases, and other files, and demanding a ransom for their release. The Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors has voted to take on high-interest or payday lenders who, critics say, prey on vulnerable low-income consumers. And, as KPFK's Laura Cantor reports, L.A. County plans to use zoning rules to limit the number of payday lenders in low-income communities.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB, found that these high-cost loans have an annual percentage rate of 391%. Payday loans are advertised as a source of emergency funds, but the Pew Charitable Trust found that 70% of borrowers use them to pay monthly expenses like rent or utilities. Supervisor Janice Hahn says the county has the power over zoning to stop so many of them from opening up in vulnerable neighborhoods.
I know just in an unincorporated area of South Whittier, there are more than 5 payday loan agencies in less than 3 miles.
The supervisor's plan includes a marketing campaign to educate consumers on how to cope with a financial emergency without relying on high loan lenders. Community Financial Services Association of America, a trade association representing payday lenders, has threatened to sue to stop the new regulations from taking effect in 2019. The association's CEO said that the rules would prevent consumers from having access to vital credit. For KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, I'm Laura Cantor.
Officials say firefighters in Southern California have reached the halfway point in their attempt to corral the massive Thomas wildfire. But Cal Fire officials say before the fire is fully contained, the blaze will almost certainly become the biggest in state history. Fire officials say favorable wind conditions allowed firefighters to make excellent progress Monday and reach the 50% containment milestone on the blaze burning in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties. I'm Max Pringle. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines. Now we go to our interview with Ramona, Africa, and Karim. They joined us in studio. The city of Philadelphia made history by bombing the home of MOVE, a community-based organization at 6221 Osage Avenue in Philadelphia. The bombing took place in a residential area in 1954. 85. The mayor at the time was Wilson Good, who happened to be the first black mayor of Philadelphia. The fire from the attack incinerated and killed 6 adults and 5 children and destroyed 65 homes in the city of Philadelphia. Here to discuss all of this with us, we'd like to welcome 2 guests in studio. I'm delighted and honored to have in studio Ramona Africa, the sole survivor of the attack. Ramona, welcome.
On the move. Thank you very much for having me.
Also, Karim. Welcome. Karim is a Revolutionary MOVE supporter. Karim, welcome.
All right. Well, thank you. On the move.
Okay. So, we're just going to have a conversation about all of this because the city of Philadelphia made history. I don't know, and maybe you do, know of any other occasion that this happened, that a city literally went into a residential area and bombed out residents that included women and children. Ramona.
Certainly it's not the very same thing, but in 1921, I believe it was, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the black community was bombed. Black Wall Street was bombed. And that is the only other occasion that I know of that people were bombed. A residential area was bombed.
But I don't isn't even MOVE believe. Unique in the fact that this was literally city officials that
exactly.
bombed it out, which is
exactly.
a little different in Tulsa. It was
exactly.
a white riot.
Riot, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and city officials never were accountable. I mean, nobody
was ever held accountable for their crimes on May 13th of 1985. And the thing is, right now, our family, known as the MOVE 9, who have been in prison since 1978 for a crime they did not commit, this marks 37 years for them, they have been repeatedly denied parole because the parole board is saying they won't take responsibility for their crimes of August 8, 1978. Now, MOVE didn't commit any crime on August 8th of 1978. Mm-hmm. Police and officials came out to our home to kill. Mm-hmm. And because they were so furious and so anxious to kill off MOVE people, they ended up killing one of their own, a cop named James Rant. Of course, they were never going to admit that, but mm-hmm. all the evidence shows it.
And they're going to blame MOVE members for that.
Absolutely. But the crux of the point is they're saying that MOVE won't take responsibility for a crime we didn't commit. Mm-hmm. When are they ever going to take responsibility for the many, numerous crimes that they commit?
Right, and we'll be talking a bit more about that as we get into what is happening on the ground now. But for our listeners who may not have heard of this, who may be shocked that such a thing happened, first of all, give us a sense of what it was like. I mean, you were there. You survived it. I can't imagine the heartbreak, the mayhem, the trauma of going through something like that, Ramona, Africa.
Well, let me start with Mother's Day, Sunday, May 12th of 1985. That is when the police began to converge and to set up for their
Mother's Day.
That's when they began to set up for their deadly plan to exterminate, annihilate me and my family. People need to be clear on that. This was not an eviction. It was not a plan to arrest. Their intent was one thing: to kill, to annihilate the MOVE organization, the same as it was in 1978, mm-hmm. on August 8th of 78. They started setting up their weaponry of war. We didn't know exactly that morning, that Sunday morning, what was happening. Some of our children went food shopping with one of our supporters to the Italian market, it was called then. Mm-hmm. And when she arrived and drove off with the kids, the street was not blocked off or anything. And when she came back, however, the street was blocked off. And a cop, a black cop named George Draper, came over to the car, to her car, looked in it. He knew Gloria. He knew our kids by sight. He looked in, he saw them, then he went and removed the barricade and let her drive back on the street with the kids and let them back in the house. Now, for those who want to hallucinate and believe what Wilson Good said about he gave orders for the cops that if they could take custody of our kids, remove them from the situation to do it, well, the exact opposite was done. All right, so we're listening to the all-news radio station in Philadelphia, KYW, and we hear about the cops converging on Osage, and we weren't very concerned at first because on August 8th of 1984, mm-hmm. the date that the police attacked our family in 1978, cops converged on Osage Avenue and Cobbs Creek Parkway. They were there for most of the day, good mm-hmm. portion of the day, but then they just packed up and left. So we didn't know if they were going to do the same thing this time or what. So we're just watching, just, you know, keeping track of what's going on. Finally, when it got late, started getting late and getting dark, and they were still there, and we saw that all the cars had been moved off the street. We got word, we were hearing that neighbors were being told it was Mother's Day, take your wife, take your mother out for dinner, we'll take care of this, you'll be back home by tonight. So we kind of got a picture that they were going to do something. And both confrontations.
We were getting the neighbors away from the
area.
From the area.
Yeah. So we all went to the basement. That was the safest part of the house. That's where, you know, we were going. The first thing that happened, and I didn't hear this, I can't speak for anybody else.
Yeah.
You know. But we didn't hear this announcement, but Gregory Sambor, the police commissioner, we believe him when he says he made this announcement saying, attention move. This is America. You have to abide by the laws and something of America, American society. Now, I didn't hear that.
This
then.
Is America, so we're going to bomb you.
When I heard that, first thing that went through my mind is, attention move, this is America. Do you know what second and third graders are taught about the founding of America? I mean, what do you think would have happened if Gregory Sambor was living in, you know, 1776 and went up to Nathan Hale's house or Patrick Henry's house saying, attention, Patrick, attention, Nathan, this is a British colony and you have to abide by the laws of the crown. What do you think would have happened to him? They probably would have blew his head off. And today, the people that blew his head off would be honored and celebrated every 4th of July.
They would be heroes.
As heroes, freedom fighters.
So this was supposed to be the warning for MOVE members
to come out.
To come out.
Come out.
Or else. Did they say what the or else was?
They said 15 minutes. That's what he said the announcement was. 15 minutes. We had 15 minutes to come out. But we weren't going to come out for several reasons. One, we knew they weren't there to arrest us. They had every opportunity to arrest us. And Kareem can speak on that because we went shopping every week, twice a week at the same place.
Went to the park every day, went swimming every day, had the kids all the time. The kids were up and down the street. If they were trying to protect the kids, as they said, that they were looking out for the kids, they had many chances to intercept the kids.
And Kareem, were you involved at the time?
No, I wasn't involved at the time.
Right.
But I do want to take you back just a little bit, which led up to May 13th, 1985.
Yeah, why don't you?
August 8th, 1978, when Rizzo, who was the mayor of Philadelphia, had
and
over 600...
well-known history
well-known,
of racist,
very racist,
racist,
extremely racist.
Mayor, white mayor of Philadelphia.
Yes, had 600 police surround the MOVE house. But prior to that, and it's a long story, there was a blockade, a starvation blockade, put on MOVE, where they wanted MOVE to come out the house. They had warrants on MOVE people, frivolous warrants. MOVE hadn't raped anybody, hadn't killed anybody, wasn't selling drugs. MOVE people don't use drugs. And they surrounded the house. Well, that period went over, which led up to August 8th. Actually, they said, y'all got 90 days to MOVE out of town. That's really what they said.
Said, get out of town,
get out of town
or,
town,
die.
Or die.
Get out or
that
die.
That was the headlines of
the
Philadelphia Journal newspaper. Get out of town or die. They had a brother named Nick Africa with the paper in his hand. So they gave a MOVE 90 days to vacate the premises.
Can I ask this? And again, reminding our listeners, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and our guest in studio, Ramona Africa, who happened to just survive, likely barely, the bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Historic bombing. It's the first time that we know of that city officials ordered the bombing of a house, including women and children in a residential area, and also Kareem, who is a Revolutionary Move supporter. And we're just trying to get a sense of what the timeline of the initial attacks back in 1978, you're saying, and then the attacks that happened May 13th of this year marked 30 years since that bombing took place. So
they're connected.
Can I ask this, though? Now, I'm sure just our audience will want to find out, why did they have it in so much for MOVE? I mean, you were working, a Black Liberation Organization, into healthy eating, health foods, alternative, quote-unquote, alternative lifestyle, in the fact that this, you know, you had a certain way of living and a certain way of taking care of yourselves, taking care of your bodies. What was the big beef?
Very simply, Ramona. Margaret, everything that John Africa promoted, encouraged, and MOVE
and John Africa is the founder of MOVE,
is very simple: to respect, revere, be protective of life, all life, human life, animal life, plant life, the earth that feeds us, the air we must have to breathe, the water we must have to drink. And if you follow that reasoning, it puts you in direct conflict with this system and everything about it. Nobody that pushes the system believes in life. They will compromise life. They will barter life in a minute for money. That's their God.
So how long did the MOVE organization, how long was it in place before this bombing happened?
Since like 1971.
71.
Right. Yeah. And the example that MOVE have set, our first demonstrations were at the zoo protesting the unjust enslavement and abuse of animals. We protested the circus. Yeah. And also
all things that people would find very reasonable
today.
Entertaining. Well, it's amazing that people would find these things acceptable and entertaining, particularly African people. I mean, the same thing that is done to a lion kidnapped from Africa, separated from his mate, his children, transported across the water.
Doesn't that sound familiar?
Yeah. Enslaved in a zoo, you know, abused, depending on people for his food even, you know.
Yeah.
Excuse me? Isn't that what happened to African slaves?
Yeah, and Oda Benga was actually, an African, was actually put in the Bronx Zoo in the early 1900s. Okay. And the New York Times defended it, by the way.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, with MOVE putting out information like that, demanding that fur stores, furriers, explain and substantiate their so-called right to massacre animals, minks, seals, foxes, rabbits, in mass.
So you're an environmentalist organization.
We believe in life.
Yeah,
very
you believe
simple.
In life. Yeah.
And because of our belief in life and us standing up for life in defense of innocent animals, the air, the water, we demonstrated against DuPont Chemicals and Dow Chemical for poisoning the environment. The thing is, everything that John Africa stands for, the belief he gave us that life is the priority, not a priority, the priority. You can't exist without life.
Yeah.
And because MOVE is strong in that position, it earned us the scorn of those that represent this system.
And you're also black.
Absolutely. Well, so, let me clarify that, too. We are a predominantly black organization.
But you are multiracial.
Yes. There are white people in MOVE. There have been Jewish people in MOVE, Spanish people in MOVE. The only requirement to be in MOVE is a willingness to stand up for what's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I also need to make this point very briefly. Everything that MOVE represents and represented back in 1971, we wear our hair uncombed. Mm-hmm. The diet given us by John Africa is a raw food diet.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our members,
very
particularly
popular in Beverly Hills.
Well, that's
today.
What I'm getting ready to say. We had our children naturally at home, not in hospitals. Our children are homeschooled. We don't send them off to our enemy to so-called educate them.
Mm-hmm.
What is called today composting, MOVE was doing back in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things that I just named, we were ostracized and criticized for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, black people would holler out, comb your hair, take a bath. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
But my point is, today, in 2015, everybody and their mother, athletes, celebrities, are wearing uncombed hair.
That's right. I know I certainly am.
Raw food restaurants
mm-hmm.
are from the West Coast to the East Coast. Very mm-hmm. popular. It's the thing.
And very expensive.
Yes. Home birthing, childbirth, natural childbirth, is being encouraged today. They're not being encouraged to go all the way
mm-hmm.
and leave these hospitals and stuff alone,
yeah.
period. And MOVE is not crazy. We understand that every woman is not healthy enough or strong enough to be able to have their babies at home.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not being encouraged to eat a strong diet,
mm-hmm.
live a strong, healthy lifestyle, so they become strong enough, healthy enough.
Yeah.
You know, they'll say home birthing, child, natural childbirth, but you come to the hospital every so often, you know, mm-hmm. for these checkups. You have somebody come to your house to check you out and all of that. They're not going all the way, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But all I'm saying is that all these things that MOVE was involved in, criticized for, ostracized for, is the thing to do.
Bombed out for. And, Kareem, you said you weren't around at this time. How did you first get in touch with MOVE, bringing you into this
conversation? I was doing time in Western State Penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to read paper accounts about MOVE.
Mm-hmm.
And it drew my interest. They were protesting at the zoos, like Ramona mm-hmm. said, at the circuses, at veterinarians' offices, at politicians' offices, at chemical companies.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was it escalated.
Mm-hmm.
The police, every time I looked up in the papers, a MOVE member was being beat. Pregnant women were beaten into miscarriages. Many pregnant women. Life Africa was 3 weeks old in 1976 of March, was trampled to death by the police. So these different beatings began to escalate, and MOVE got tired of it. Now, MOVE is not a violent organization, but we're not pacifists either. We don't believe in turning the other cheek. So the police knew this.
We believe self-defense is
we believe
no
in self,
offense.
Yes, that's a God-given thing. It's an mm-hmm. instinct that's put in all life. I don't
mm-hmm.
care from the smallest form of life to a biggest turtle got a shell, you know, a rabbit hops, a dog bites. Every form of life has its own self-defense, and we believe in that. But all this led up to finally August 8, 1978, when the police surrounded MOVE's house. 600 police surrounded the house with arsenals of M16s and you name them, the M60 machine guns.
Yeah.
Mona probably can outline some of the weapons, but every weapon you can think of, 50 caliber machine guns on tripods, mm-hmm. and move could come out on their porch and see police snipers. Across the street, snipers on set with sandbags. This went on for how long? On a month?
It went on for a year from May of 77 and so-called ended in May of 78.
So I'm saying all that to say, that's what led up. The incarceration of the Move 9, who were blamed for the murder of policeman James Ramp, who in Philadelphia is just common knowledge that everybody know that Move didn't kill that cop. Mm-hmm. Move never fired a shot. Mm-hmm. Move refers to it as a shoot-in, not a shoot-out. Mm-hmm. And the police was shot from behind in the top of his head. Now, Move was in the basement. Damn. So how in the world can they shoot up and across the street and behind in his head? The police very well know that they shot him. In their rage and determination to get Move, they killed one of their own. But they had to blame somebody. They weren't going to take the blame. And they had this deep resentment for Move because of what Move stood for.
Yeah.
Because Move wasn't afraid of cops, you know. And so
wouldn't back down. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and our in-studio guest, Ramona Africa, survivor of the bombing where the city of Philadelphia bombed its own citizens and killed a number of people, including children. Also, Kareem, who's a Revolutionary Move supporter. We're going to take a short station break, and when we return, we're going to continue our conversation about the Move organization, and then we're going to fast forward that a bit to the movements of today. We'll be right back.
All right.
Yes, they rabbi, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation. Triumphantly, won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourself.
Welcome back to Sojourner Truth, and that piece of music was the late, great Bob Marley's Redemption Song. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that in its entirety, we'd like to welcome our SoundCloud listeners. You could check us out on SoundCloud. Go to our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And if you're a member of Facebook, please like and friend us on Facebook. We now continue our discussion with Ramona Africa of Move, as well as a Move supporter, Kareem. Ramona Africa is the sole survivor of the bombing, the historic bombing of the Move House by Philadelphia Police Department on May 13th, 1985, that resulted in the deaths of 11 people, including 5 children.
The theme is the city of brotherly love, and the city that Frederick Douglass referred to as the most racist city in the United States. We've been discussing the lead up to the city of Philadelphia making history by bombing its own citizens, killing a number of people, including children, 6 adults and 5 children, I think.
Absolutely.
And Ramona Africa, a survivor of that attack, and also Kareem, who is a Revolutionary Move supporter, who was in prison at the time that this bombing happened. So in fact, I do remember when this happened, and it was just such a shock for people,
you know, across the country, yeah. And for people of goodwill, I should say, across the country. I don't think people had ever imagined that something like that would have happened.
They didn't.
But I want to, this is also happening within the context of, you had the civil rights movement, you had the militant black movement, you know, coming up, and a lot happening around the country. Right. This August 11th marks 50 years of the Watts Rebellion. We're calling it, some of them call it the Watts Riots. We certainly know after the assassination of Martin Luther King, over 100, I think about 121 cities across the United States went up practically in flames. The city of Washington, D.C. was practically shut down. This is the context and the level of struggle of the movement at the time. But I want now to integrate into this discussion Mamia Abu-Jamal. Mamia in prison right now. And Mamia was very much known for covering as a journalist. Yes. He's a very fine journalist. Yes. Today, still doing journalism from inside prison walls. So tell us about the connection with Mamia Abu-Jamal and the MOVE organization.
Mamia is a longtime MOVE supporter. Mumia became very interested in MOVE back in the early 70s because he was hearing all this negative, you know, all these negative comments about MOVE, and he wanted to know why. He wanted to find out himself. So one of the first things that happened with Mumia, he was working at a radio station, and Jesse Jackson was in town, and MOVE people were demonstrating Jesse Jackson. And Mumia was asking Jesse, well, why are they demonstrating you? You know, what's going on? Why are they demonstrating? Jesse's response was, oh, I don't know. Who cares about them nappy-haired niggas that don't comb their hair? This was Jesse's response.
Them's fine
and
words.
That made Mumia say, he wanted to know more about MOVE. He interviewed MOVE people, including my sister Janine Africa, whose three-week-old baby had been trampled to death by the cops. He didn't come to MOVE headquarters putting a mic in Janine's phone, I mean her face. He sat down, you know, waited till she was ready, talked to her a little bit before even turning on the mic. I mean, he was compassionate, you know. He did not just think he knew what was going on. He went to MOVE trials. He went to MOVE demonstrations himself. He went up to the prison and interviewed MOVE people. He also interviewed and attempted to interview all kinds of officials, you know? He didn't do a one-sided thing, but the fact is a lot of officials wouldn't talk to him, or what they were saying was so crazy, but he would still quote them. But unlike other journalists, he would quote MOVE. He wouldn't just say MOVE spouts rhetoric, MOVE curses judge.
Use profanity.
Yeah. He quoted MOVE, you know. And
the wrong thing to do.
And being a former Panther, he was a Panther for, I think, a little over a year because the party was disintegrating by the time he came. But having that background, having his foundation in writing and journalism in writing for the Panther Party newspaper, you know, he thought a certain way. He wasn't like the rest of those journalists. So MOVE just captured his interest more and more. And the more he saw, the more interested he got, and the more he began to report on MOVE. Mumia lost jobs because of his reporting, mainly on MOVE, but not only on MOVE. His bosses tried to dominate and dictate what, you know, he could cover and all of that. Mumia was not having it. He lost many jobs because of that. That's how he ended up driving a cab on the night of December 9th of 1981. He had that as a part-time job because he became a freelance journalist and covered what he wanted to cover.
And then
sold his stories when he could. He didn't make a lot of money like that.
Right.
And he took a job, part-time job, driving a cab. And that's why he was driving a cab in December of 1981.
Right. And, of course, a police officer was killed that night, and Mumia blamed for that death. And there's been no evidence, no proof of that whatsoever. And, indeed, Mumia himself had been attacked. And, you know, a lot of people believe that it was, yeah, he was shot. He was hurt. That the attack on Mumia happened in great part, may not be the only reason, but because of the coverage that he was giving to the MOVE organization, and that some people had it in for Mumia still in prison, and now we understand his health is at risk right now. He has hepatitis, and they're not allowing him to get
medical
care. They've
known he's had hepatitis.
For three years.
Since 2012. Yeah. This is 2015. For 3 years they've known it and have done nothing. They've known he had diabetes. When he first passed out in March of this year and was taken to the hospital, they knew he was diabetic. Then his sugar level was 779.
Mm.
800 is diabetic coma. All right. So they knew that. They kept him in the hospital, got his sugar down to like 400 and something, which is still extremely high. The normal sugar level, they say blood sugar level, is 100 or lower. Just under that. 400 and something, okay? They send him back to the prison, and the first meal he gets is pasta, which you know is white pasta. It's not whole grain pasta even. White pasta. And what else did they give him? Some kind of sweet drinks.
Now,
you give somebody who's sugar is high and they're diabetic, that's the meal you give them?
Kareem, do you think, I mean, Mumia won the victory of being taken off of death row, because we know that there were a lot of interest in killing Mumia.
Right.
Do you think now that he's been taken off of death row that this is another attempt to kill Mumia?
Yes, I do, definitely. Mm-hmm. Mumia has lost a tremendous amount of weight. His skin is like alligator skin. His eyesight is going bad. He has almost like bifocal eyeglasses. Ramona recently called up there to see that he gets a pair of glasses because he doesn't even have them. So we feel in the MOVE organization that it definitely, some people call it medical neglect. But we definitely feel as though that they don't care whether Mumia lives or dies. They really don't. Because Mumia is an international political prisoner. So, yes, we definitely feel as though that they're doing what they can to let Mumia die.
Yeah, and just both of you, this, by the way, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. For those of you who are just tuning in, I have the honor of having in studio Ramona Africa from the MOVE organization in Philadelphia. She is a survivor of the bombing of the city of Philadelphia, of the MOVE residents that killed 6 adults, 5 children, destroyed 65 homes. She survived. Also in studio is Kareem, who is a revolutionary MOVE supporter. And so if you've missed any part of this hour, you're going to have to go to our website, to SoundCloud or to the archives, to be able to, the Pacifica Radio archives, to be able to get the rest of the what you missed of this show. But I just wanted to fast forward a little bit, because we were all together recently in Cleveland mm-hmm. at the Movement for Black Lives Matter convention, which was a remarkable event.
Over a thousand people,
all black,
tons of young people.
Yes,
95% or so young. But one of the things I wanted to really discuss and get your thoughts on, I know that you participated in a workshop on COINTELPRO. The movement that's coming up now, and talking with Hank Jones from the Panther Aid and some of the, you know, the elders mm-hmm. in the movement, know very well that the movement of today, they have not gone through the repression that you all have been through, mm-hmm. that the Panthers have been through. And if the movement continues to grow and be successful, there is fear that that repression will come. What was your message at that conference and in the workshop you spoke about of COINTELPRO, which of course is the FBI operation to suppress the militant black movements and militant movements generally, including
to infiltrate them as well.
Infiltrate them, yes. And some of that is likely still going on today.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
Ramona. I think it's a two-part issue here.
Yeah.
One, younger people have not gone through the repression of like the Panthers and MOVE and even SNCC and, you know, organizations like
Weathermen.
That. Mm-hmm. But the rate of killings by police of young black people, mostly male, but some women. We can't overlook Sandra Bland. Okay. That, to me, almost evens the plane, because they may not get beat, thrown in prison, you know, go through that type of repression that these other organizations that we just named went through. Mm-hmm. But their lives are clearly in jeopardy, you know, and
just walking down the street,
absolutely.
Going to the store.
When we left Cleveland on Sunday, we left early, like around 12 or so.
Yeah, I was still
there when the young boy was around with the pepper spray,
eyes burning,
right,
and everything
exactly.
else.
Exactly.
So I'm saying, you know, right there. But the other part of that is that the potential I see in the example of what happened in Cleveland, when the police approached that boy, was dealing with him,
14-year-old boy in Cleveland, having an open container.
Yeah, the people stepped up. Mm-hmm. They surrounded the car front and back, would not let them take that boy away.
Mm-mm.
His mother arrived, and because of the strong example of the people that were outside the student center and saw it and sent the alarm inside for people to know what was happening, they had to back down. They turned that boy over to his mother.
You can see the power of the people right there.
That's what it is, the power of the people. So I see potential there.
Yeah.
You know, I see potential there. We were driving back to Philly with this young couple.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got near my house, several blocks from my house, there was a police car. Was it one or two?
Well, it was one. Another one came and drove off.
Light spinning. They had the car, you know, pulled over. When the couple we were with saw that, they were there and they were looking, rode around the block, pulled over down the block to watch, took out their phone case. They had to take pictures. Mm-hmm. I mean, people don't just ride by.
No, people
situations
don't
like that. So I see the potential there. I think that people just need revolutionary information and a revolutionary example to follow. What Giant Africa have taught MOVE is that self-defense should be as instinctive as blinking your eye if something gets too close to it. Nobody has the right to take that instinct away. to say it's criminal, illegal, or whatever word they want to put on it. That should touch people like me trying to tell you that the sun is cold and water is dry. It should make no sense to people. I don't have the right to defend myself. What are you talking about?
Well, let me ask you this. Both of you get a response from you, Ramona Africa, and Kareem, who's a Revolutionary Move supporter. You all likely know, because I know we talked about it a bit, the case of Tyree Carroll in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
22-year-old black man riding his bicycle the wrong way down a one-day street, one-way street. Police beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
By the time they were done, there were 26 police officers. Mm-hmm. Some people call it a lynch mob.
That was
around him. He has bad asthma. I happen to know him and his grandmother. The only reason, getting back to your point, that we think that Tyree Carroll survived and lived is because he did try to defend himself during that, because there were points where he couldn't breathe. He remembered Eric Garner.
Right.
There was a black man killed in The Hague in Holland from the same kind of thing, the chokehold, when they're pressing down on you and you can't breathe. But
when
I wanna,
he said that, didn't he? He couldn't breathe?
He said, yeah.
I can't breathe.
Right. Like Eric Garner, 13 times, I can't breathe. Now they turned around and they charged Tyree Carroll after they beat him. Charge him with aggravated assault.
Of course.
Claim that they found some drugs on him. Who knows? And now he's being held in a prison in Philadelphia where there's no fans, no window in his cell, no air conditioning. He has bad asthma, no medication, right? So what I wanted to ask you, though, is that the police have said that after they arrested Tyree, he started hitting his head up against the police, whatever it is, bars, car. Remember that with the Baltimore story?
Freddie Gray.
Yes.
But I heard that this rough ride, as it's called in Baltimore, that they do of, you know, really you know,
bitch and,
the kind of that could cause injuries, that exists in Philadelphia as well, that the police do these rough rides.
Definitely.
Is that right?
Yes, it is. It's true.
Yeah. Kareem?
Yeah. You're we're familiar with the case of the brother, and we give all our support to the brother. We met his mother as well.
His grandmother.
His grandmother, Nancy
Yeah, his grandmother as well. I don't know his status right now, but I don't mean to say it like this, but it's kind of common that this took place. I remember years ago in Philadelphia, and a lot of people didn't remember this, and I've asked people. You used to find guys hung in Philadelphia in a cell.
Hung.
You used to find them hung all the time. So we know about police brutality and how it's been existing
and
for
years.
And
the prison guards.
And the prison guards. Same way with Move. Move would be beaten on the street, beaten. This is the only organization I've ever heard of that were beaten on the street, beaten in the courtroom in front of judges, bound and gagged in front of judges in the courtroom,
went to
prison, beaten again by the guards, and, of course, charged with assaulting the guards. The night that the bomb was dropped on Move, May the 13th, I was in Gratiot Ford Prison. 12 o'clock that night, 20 guards came to my cell. I'm in my cell. I'm not bothering nobody. Told me to come out. I refused to come out. A battle ensued. They knocked me out, took me down to what's commonly known as the hole, maximum security, and charged me with 4 assaults on the guards and gave me a year in the hole. But this is typical. It's just not moving.
Solitary confinement
for a year, and then transfer me to another institution. But again, it's commonplace.
Yeah.
So,
I'm looking at the clock and being told we have 5 minutes. I can't believe how the time has flown by. Would you believe this?
Yeah.
We need a series, y'all.
Look, we did an all-day radiothon, for lack of a better word, in 95, marking 10 years since the bombing, from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. We still didn't cover everything.
So I should feel bad.
You should not feel bad.
It means, though, that we're going to have to continue this conversation.
That'd be good. That'd be very good.
Because just in terms of final thoughts here, you have the
Black Lives Matter movement coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a growing environmental movement. You have a growing anti-austerity movement going on in Europe. So just final thoughts on that. I mean, are you hopeful that we are seeing or moving towards a height yet again of a movement for change?
I see it in Black Matter's lives.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Especially with the Cleveland thing. That gave me a lot of hope. I was really impressed with Cleveland. I was.
Yeah.
As well as Ramona. When we talked about it a lot. So just given that, if they can maintain that course, of course they need leadership. They need guidance. That's why they look to us. They look to the elders for that. That's what they came there for. They wanted to hear people like Pam from the Panther Party and Daruba. Yes,
and
you know.
And you
so yes, I'm very hopeful that you know, organization will form from this and then just take off from there. So yes, we're very optimistic about that.
Yeah, remember.
I'm definitely optimistic for several reasons, but one that I didn't say earlier. This system that we're living under is on a collision course with destruction.
Mm.
It can't be any other way. It's wrong to its roots. And nothing right or good can come from it. And people are often reluctant to stand up and fight back. But it has been proven over and over again. When you back people into a corner and it becomes clear to them that they have nothing to lose, they're backed into a corner, that is when people will stand up and fight back.
Right.
And I think that's what's happening now. People feel like they have nothing to lose. You know, things are so intense, and I mean, people are being just wantonly killed, you know, on the street by cops, and they're never held accountable, you know. I think people are fastly approaching the point where they feel like they have nothing to lose and that they better stand up.
Yeah, and in the words of Frantz Fanon, who said, we have to do the work of creating a new human being.
Mm.
Well, Ramona Africa, Kareem, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Margaret, for having us.
Thank you.
And this was a one-hour special conversation with Ramona Africa of MOVE and Kareem, a MOVE supporter. I would like to thank both of today's guests. Today's show produced by Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, longtime intern Sherelle Withers, board operator Stan Misrahi. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. God, thank you for listening.
It's 10 o'clock. Stay tuned to KBOO at 10:15 for Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, we've got the food show today, talking with Liz Carlisle, the author of Lentil Underground, Renegade Farmers and the Future of Food in America. All that coming up.